This episode of the Knicks Film School Podcast is brought to you by our new sponsor, Oakley. When you wear Oakley, there really is more than meets the eye. Don't trust me? Try it for yourself. I've worn a lot of sunglass brands in my life, and I can assure you that Oakley is not just the best looking, but the best quality out there. Head on over to Oakley.com for more information today.
Shepard on the drive, out to Anthony Smith, the three-pointer, way off the mark. Chandler tips it out again. And the Knicks will reset down by two. Mike Whitson not calling timeout.
And I like that move.
In the hands of Anthony. Anthony for three. Puts it in! Knicks by one with 8.2 remaining!
Man.
Get chills watching that. All right. Here we are. It's a little after noon. What the hell day is today? Monday. A Monday in late May. Lots of basketball going on. And we got an announcement today, earlier today, courtesy of the man himself, Carmelo Anthony, saying that this is it. This is it. He didn't obviously play basketball this year for an NBA team, but still kind of kept hope alive that maybe there would be one more run. One more chance for Melo to join up with a team either, until late in the year, either this season or maybe even next year, give it one more go to try to, you know, get a ring or just, you know, be a part of a rotation. Turns out we're not going to get it. So how many decades was it? It's been two decades since he was the number three overall pick in the 2003 NBA draft. Carmelo Anthony makes it official, hangs up his sneakers, high tops for the last time. I'm going to bring Andrew Claudio up here in a few minutes because I think of the two of us, he is certainly the more appropriate one to speak a little bit about Carmelo Anthony, because he is just, and he'll tell you, and I'll tell you, he's a much bigger Melo fan than I am. And I think that's the only appropriate place to start, because unlike a lot of athletes, you know, that especially reach the levels of greatness that Carmelo Anthony reached, opinions on him really from the day he was drafted have always been more divided. And no place have those opinions been more divided than where he played the majority of his career, which was here in New York for the Knicks. And I still remember the day that he was traded to Chicago. Not Chicago. You know why I'm thinking Chicago? I'm thinking Chicago because we got the Bulls pick that turned into Mitchell Robinson in that trade. Excuse me. To Oklahoma City. I don't remember where Oklahoma City got that pick from or what was the trade that they got that pick from. But yeah, the day he was traded to Oklahoma City for Enes Kanter. Doug McDermott, I think, was in that trade. And yes, the pick that became Mitch. I wrote something shortly thereafter. And it was basically, it was me being as a you know, junior blogger there. It was me being about as smug as I could be, where it's like, not good riddance necessarily, but like, this is a player who leaves behind a complicated legacy, and I am using the word complicated to put it kindly. Because in my heart of hearts, I did not really feel like it was complicated. I felt like Carmelo Anthony was defined by what he didn't do here, what he couldn't bring to the franchise, and perhaps some of the missteps that he made along the way. And that was, let's see, it was right after my daughter's first birthday. My daughter's 6 and a half, so that's 5 and a half years ago. In the 5 and a half years since that happened, and as the franchise continued to struggle in Carmelo's immediate departure, and as I don't want to speak for anybody else, but as I certainly began to think about the sport much more deeply and think about the franchise much more deeply as I started to write about it more and podcast and now, you know, doing all this stuff, you know, I think I started to gain a different perspective and a new perspective more and more as the years passed. And I think the reason I needed to gain that perspective on Carmelo Anthony was because we had waited, and I will say we, I will include everybody in this. We had waited so long to get the guy, to get the savior, to get the one who was going to fix all the wrongs of the 10 years since Patrick Ewing last laced it up for the franchise. And then he was obviously traded away in 2000, and it was almost, you know, it was about, you know, almost 10 years on the nose between when Patrick was traded away and when Carmelo Anthony was brought in. And in all that time, you know, the search for relevance, the search for, the search for just good players, was so draining that when Melo got traded here, it was like, all right, that's it. We're back on the map. This is the guy. Like, Stoudemire's already here. There are other pieces in place. We'll figure out the nuts and the bolts. I know we pay a lot for him, but like, we got our guy now. And that's how I looked at him. And I think that's how a lot of Knicks fans looked at him at the time. And when you are, we as NBA fans, I think you are conditioned to be like, all right, when we have the guy, that's all. I mean, there are expectations that come with that. And the expectations are you're going to be in it every year. Might not win a championship every year. Might not even ever win a championship. Patrick Ewing never won a championship. Didn't make him any less the guy. But you're going to at least be in it. You're going to be in it every year. And you're going to win playoff series. And you're going to have moments. And Carmelo Anthony's career, with the exception of one season in 2012-13, was not made up of the moments that I think many of us thought that we were getting when he came here. And the longer it lasted, the more people, whether you were inclined to be kind of a Melo skeptic when he was traded here, or you were kind of on the fence or anywhere in between, started to become harder and harder and harder on him for what he couldn't do. And it began to overshadow what he could do, and in fact, what he did do for this franchise. And this franchise, at the time that they acquired him, and really for the majority of his tenure, was just such an utter disaster, to the point that the trade that brought him here was really the beginning. I mean, not the beginning of the end, it was the end, really, of the Donnie Walsh era. And once Donnie Walsh left, it just, I mean, the organization was, I mean, you could really argue the organization was in a state of chaos in terms of their decision making and in terms of how they operated right up until, you know, Leon Rose came here. So, and that's the era during which Carmelo Anthony played for the Knicks. Was Carmelo Anthony responsible for some of what maybe didn't go right? Yeah, absolutely. But like, show me the NBA player that hasn't made missteps. Show me the NBA player that hasn't made significant missteps along the way. Like the guy, like your Tim Duncan's, and you're like, how many players? Count on one hand the amount of players in NBA history that it's like, just like the day they're drafted, steady as she goes, 50 wins every year, playoffs every year, finals every other year, every third year or whatever. Like, the list is so short. Every other player, pretty much, most of like of the 75 greatest players who ever lived, like, they all had moments, and they all had some like really, really low moments. Like LeBron James, one, you know, two or three greatest players to ever live. God knows he's had some down moments, and you could go right on down the list. And Carmelo Anthony had his moments here, but because the Knicks during that time did not have any semblance of an infrastructure to like withstand the fact that, like, you know, Melo was a great player. He's a Hall of Fame player. He's a top 75 player ever. He is a Pantheon level player. I think you could argue he's maybe one of the top 50 players ever. I think you could probably argue he's one of the top 30 or 40 players ever. What you can't argue is that he wasn't one of, at worst, the 15 greatest scorers who ever lived. And when you get a guy like that, I think most organizations, if they would have gotten Melo for the years that the Knicks had Melo, most organizations would have been able to make so much more of him than the Knicks made of him. And because they weren't able to, it has clouded his legacy to the point where, you know, I sent out a tweet earlier today saying, like, I mean, full stop, one of the five greatest Knicks ever, and please God, retire his jersey immediately. And of course, I immediately got a ton of pushback against that because I get it, because I was one of the people pushing back against everybody who argued on behalf of Melo for so much of the time that he was here and then after he left. And I'm sorry, but that's the wrong way to handle it. Carmelo Anthony has the ninth most points of anyone who's ever played in the NBA. He has more points than Moses Malone. He has more points than Elvin Hayes. He has more points than Oscar Robertson. More points than Tim Duncan. He has almost as many points as Shaquille O'Neal. He fell about 300 points short of Shaq. Shaquille O'Neal is the most dominant offensive player I've ever seen play the sport of basketball. And Carmelo Anthony is right there in terms of career points. In terms of career scoring average, he's a little bit lower. As of right now, NBA history, he's 37th. But there's about 10 to 15 guys ahead of him right now that are going to come back down to earth because they're still active and they're going to have those periods at the end of their career. So, like, if you go by career scoring average, even factoring in the late periods of Melo's career when he was in kind of an end-of-the-bench player and really wasn't putting it up, even by that metric, he's one of the top 25 or so scorers who ever lived. I think top 15 is about where I'm at in terms of scoring. And again, if you get a guy like that on your team, you should be able to do so much more with it than the Knicks did. And because they weren't able to do more with it, you know, when I sit down and do something like this and Andrew is getting ready to put on a clip to introduce this live stream, it's a regular season clip because we didn't get, I mean, there are a few playoff moments, not really many of them. I mean, the sad truth is that Melo's most notable playoff moment will probably always be the block, you know, the Roy Hibbert block. And again, that, yeah, he does have to own that, but that should not be on him. Not totally, and not even mostly, because of what else was going on here during the time that he was in New York. You know, the legacy that he leaves behind in NBA history, I find to be a fascinating one. I was going through the top 75 players list before, and if you just focus on the last 40 years, so basically the modern NBA since like Magic, Bird, and then, you know, like Jordan and those guys came in, there's only five players on that top 75 list who were never either the best or second best player on a team that made it at least to the finals. And Andrew, let me know if I've missed anybody. If you want to do a quick fact check while I'm talking, it's Carmelo, it's James Harden, it's Damian Lillard, it's Steve Nash, and it's one other guy who really, for so many reasons and in a lot of ways, is Carmelo Anthony's closest historical comp, and that's Dominique Wilkins. And Dame, you know, like, he has the whole Dame time thing. Like, no one's ever accused Dame of being anything other than one of the best clutch players in the league. He has all kinds of postseason moments on his resume. Like, so he doesn't have to wear that in the way that some other guys have to wear it. Steve Nash, guy's a two-time MVP. The Suns almost, but not quite, moments in the playoffs during those years were not on Nash. They are well documented. No one's ever going to knock Steve Nash for not being able to make a finals. Which leaves you then with three guys: Carmelo, James Harden, Dominique Wilkins. Now, James Harden won an MVP. He finished second in MVP voting, I think, three other times. So, like, even him, he has the regular season accolades that Carmelo never quite got to. You know, to say nothing of the fact that he's been to the playoffs a shit ton of times and, like, has won playoff series, has had big playoff games, and he was the third best player on a team that went to the NBA Finals. So put Harden aside, and that leaves us with two. It leaves us with Melo, and it leaves us with Dominique Wilkins. And Dominique Wilkins is a guy famously who was left off of the NBA's 50 greatest players list. I thought it was egregious at the time. I still think it's egregious. And I think, like, again, when you're talking historically about Neek, it's a, you know, for a lot of people, it's a dicey conversation because he never made the conference finals even. Now, Melo did make a conference finals. He made it with Denver. And that is absolutely part of his resume. So, you know, he's a tricky guy to talk about historically. But again, I have to put the blame mostly on the Knicks for that. Because if you look at what he did, you look at what he's done, and you just, I mean, look at his place in the franchise. He has, as of right now, it's funny, actually, Jalen Brunson came close to passing him. He has the third highest scoring average in Knicks history behind Bob McAdoo and Bernard King, just ahead of Jalen Brunson, Patrick Ewing, and Julius Randle. Those are the only guys who averaged more than 20.1 points per game. Randle's at 22. Ewing's at 22. Brunson's at 24. Melo's at 24.7. The difference between Melo and all of those guys other than Ewing, Melo played 412 games for the Knicks, and he played here for seven seasons. Ewing, obviously, is in a class by himself, played 15 seasons here. But after him and after Melo, the next highest is four. Bernard King, four seasons here. Julius Randle, four seasons here. Bob McAdoo, three seasons here. And again, those were like parts of seasons. And King, it's because of, with King, it's because of injury. McAdoo, because he was traded. So, like, in terms of just scoring at a prodigious rate over a long period of time, for this franchise, it's Ewing and it's Melo. And that's it. That's the list for guys who did it over a sustained period of time and did it at a certain level. It's sad that he never got one more chance to really give it a go when he was good enough to really contribute to a team. I was rooting for it. I would have welcomed him back with open arms if he wanted to give it one last go around next year with the Knicks. I think it would have been cool, especially since I hope that the Knicks are back next year being a good team again. But for today, I think we sit and we appreciate and, you know, just kind of appreciate and understand that for whatever your feelings may be on Carmelo Anthony, good, bad, or indifferent, at least always understand the context of what was going on when he was here. And the fact that, like, really just like ask yourself, how many other players would have done all that much better? How many of Melo's contemporaries would have been able to overcome maybe some of the other stuff that was going on here at the time and bring the Knicks to a place where, you know, he couldn't bring them? It's a short list. And, you know, that I think that needs to be kept in focus. So for anybody who, you know, maybe doesn't have the fondest memories of Anthony.
For over 30 years, the law offices of Weiss and Rosenblum in New York City has been home to a team of award-winning, hard-hitting injury attorneys who have a long track record of seven-figure results. Whether you've been injured in a car accident, fall, construction accident, or other traumatic event, Weiss and Rosenblum will work tirelessly to maximize the award regardless of the severity of your injury and get you and your family the fair and just compensation you deserve. Call Weiss and Rosenblum today at 212-366-6100. Again, that's 212-366-6100 or visit weissandrosenblum.com for more information. No case is too big or too small. Personal attention to your matter is a priority. Once more, call 212-366-6100. Previous results do not guarantee future outcomes. If you think you might have a case, speak with a veteran attorney, not a rookie.
And on that note, I'm going to bring up someone who has many fond memories.
So that was extremely well said. And, you know, I've been thinking a lot since the announcement was made about specifically what you're saying in the sense of, like, how much do we blame him for why it was a second round exit? And that's it, really. Like, it's three playoff berths. It's a second round exit. And that's really all you can say it accomplished. I think because I showed up to watching the Knicks, really caring about the Knicks in 97. That's the first year I started watching the NBA. Shout out Space Jam for enlightening me that this sport of basketball existed, and watching Michael Jordan save the Looney Tunes from a lifetime of imprisonment was the thing that I was like, oh, what's this sport, this game that these people are playing? And then being like a Bulls / Michael Jordan Knicks fan, which is, I know, complicated for people that are older than me like you.
No, I love Michael Jordan. You know that.
So like, as a result, I know that there are Knicks fans out there that like, because they experienced more of the 90s, anybody that holds Melo in high regard looks silly, you know, because of how the playoffs success just isn't there or part of the resume. And because like my first real year only caring about the Knicks is 99, I have a hint of that. But you look at the run that the Knicks just made with Jalen Brunson and the Knicks legends that kept getting brought back and sitting courtside and the moments they had.
Yep.
There's this picture that was going around after game 5 of Bernard King and Marcus Camby and Allen Houston and Larry Johnson and Latrell Sprewell. Yep. And for us, that's like, oh, those are our guys. Those are those are Knicks greats. And to the rest of, I'll just specifically say it, that picture made it to Heat Twitter. And was like, ain't a damn ring amongst the bunch. And these are your legends. And for me, I recognize, like you said, the context of it being like, well, yeah, that's like, that's what it's been as a Knicks fan since 1973. There hasn't been a lot of winning to go along with it. And that's the responsibility that Melo was tasked with in 2010 when he came here, that he had to be the guy that finally did what Patrick Ewing and those 90s teams couldn't do, what Bernard King and those 80s teams couldn't do. And because of things that were, I'll say it, partly his fault, but also partly like organizationally incompetent, the organization's fault, you know, it didn't happen here. But I can't help but be like, because the only time I have as a Knicks fan in the 90s is 99, and only a Knicks fan is 99 and 2000, to then finally get a guy, like you said, after 10 years of nothing, and the league respected him, and All-Star Weekend, I had a Knick to look forward to. And when the All-NBA teams were announced, I had a Knick to look forward to see where he landed, to the fact that like a playoff berth for the first 3 years was like, okay, what seed will it be? Not will they make the playoffs?
Yep.
It was refreshing. And that 2013 team, they weren't just winning, like they were 5-1 against the two teams that made the finals that year. The game that they won in OKC during the winning streak. Oh. I was at a conference for I was in college at the time. So I was at a conference in Vegas and I was supposed to be at some seminar. And I'm like at the time watching my ESPN app at the time. And like, yeah, I don't care about what you're about to teach me at the moment. I want to know if the Knicks beat the Thunder, a healthy Thunder team that, as we all know, had just gone to the finals the year before. And that was largely led by the guy that finished third in MVP that season. Like, think about that. MVP voting.
I know.
We had a guy to look forward to.
Yep.
And that, I think, is for people like me who are just a little bit younger than you and then those younger. He was a guy to look forward to. He was a guy to celebrate, even though it was just one guy. And I appreciate what he was able to accomplish during, it wasn't much, but it was during those couple years where it gave a respectability to a franchise that wasn't respectable this century. And I'll always appreciate him for that alone.
And if you even wanted, just because you just brought it up, the teams that they lost to, that they won, they got swept out of the playoffs, and the other, it was gentleman's sweep. One, the Celtics went to the finals, so they lost to the eventual Eastern Conference champions. Following year, they lost to the Heat, the eventual NBA world champions. And then 2012-13, we know what happened then, which, again, that's always going to be, it's always going to be part of his legacy. It is what it is. But then, and then the year after that, that's the one that I always think about too, because that team was so snake bitten. They got off to such a terrible start. I think it was 2-9 or whatever it was. And then they were playing catch up the whole year. And then they almost kind of did it with that run towards the end of the year. And they just came up short. But like, go back and read some of the stuff about, like, you know, the consulting firm that was brought in before that year, to say nothing of the Bargnani trade. Like, again, you want to talk about an organization that not only didn't assist their superstar, but did, like, went out of their way to make that team's life more difficult and make it so that they would not achieve success. And then from that point forward, then it just went off a cliff. And by the way, Carmelo Anthony's not the first, and God knows certainly won't be the last NBA star to, you know, not be able to single-handedly drag his team, you know, to the play. Like Kevin Garnett made the Western Conference Finals with the Minnesota Timberwolves in 2004. He didn't make the playoffs with the Wolves for the next 3 years. Like that, and that's Kevin freaking Garnett, a guy who a lot of people consider one of the 20 greatest players to ever live. Couldn't drag a Wolves team to the finals for 3 straight years, you know? And nobody ever dings that. Nobody ever puts that on his resume. And why not? Because then he got traded to the Boston freaking Celtics. And it's like, oh, okay, this is what a real organization is. And like, that's just one example. There are other examples, which leads me to the last thing, which is that who's the second best player on the Knicks during the Melo era?
That's the conversation. Is like, is it J.R. Smith? Is it Tyson Chandler?
J.R.'s probably.
Is it like I'm sure you remember the Jason Kidd conversations in 2013. It's like, oh, he's got a point guard and aging on his last legs. Jason Kidd, who ended up shooting like 27% for three that year. And, you know,
I mean, Stoudemire. Yeah, he was for. I mean, actually, he wasn't ever, because by the time Melo got here, D'Antoni had already ground Stoudemire's knees into a fine paste, you know. And look, this is where the people who are more critical of Melo will jump in and be like, well, it could have been Jeremy Lin. And like, that's, I think that's the big part of it for a lot of folks, is the insanity of it all. I think it's part of the legacy. It's probably, as with most stories, more complicated than it has been made out to be.
Mm-hmm.
But that should, like, the fact that, like, Carmelo Anthony was not able to make it work, so to speak, with Jeremy Lin should not be the first, second, third, fourth, or fifth, like, top thing on his resume. I just don't think it should.
So someone reached out to me today and was like, if Jalen Brunson and Carmelo Anthony were the same age, you want to talk about a perfect player.
Oh my God,
Carmelo Anthony. Now, they would have had to surround that team with some defense, but it back then, two dynamic scorers like that would have been outstanding, especially since Brunson wouldn't have to work that hard on defense because we weren't playing the style of play today that takes advantage of small guards like that. But back then, if you put a dynamic guard, maybe a Jeremy Lin, and I think the reason I've never really bought that pushback is like Jeremy Lin didn't go on to his next team or even teams after and look like the Linsanity run. I processed Linsanity when we talked about this, when we had friend of the pod, yeah, Jeremy Lin on the show. Like, I processed it as a thing that was always going to, like, had an end game to it. And when we saw the game against the Heat, it was like, okay, now we can recontextualize when teams zero in on him, what's going to happen. And you need a guy like a Carmelo Anthony who can actually make tough shots, like a Jalen Brunson who could make tough shots when a team is geared up just towards him.
And like, you know, we conveniently, I for years conveniently ignored the fact that like play style matters. Like Carmelo Anthony played the game one way. That was how the team was built. It was built around him and that style of play. Jeremy Lin was 180 degrees different than that. That was D'Antoni ball and like that was to a T. And it's just like to expect those two things to mesh instantaneously when those guys did not get the time to try to like figure it out. And they kind of had to figure it out on the fly. And like Melo was injured and then Jeremy Lin was injured a little bit. And it's like you had a coach who had one foot out the door and then they never got a second year to do it because Lin left.
Well, didn't you mention this on the Patreon pod? Like, what's Kevin Durant's career if he doesn't play with Steph Curry?
Or even
Westbrook even. Like, are we talking about Kevin Durant similarly today if he doesn't have a Hall of Fame point guard alongside him his entire career? And like the ironic part about Carmelo Anthony's legacy, it's not even like as a Knick, but in his career, like probably would have been better off staying in Toronto and teaming up with Masai, who was a much more competent GM that probably would have built that team out better.
You mean Denver?
What did I say? Toronto.
You said Toronto.
Freudian slip, because he went on to Toronto and do the same thing. But
yeah.
If Masai in Denver had, like, if he just signed up there long term and been fine staying there, and Melo's talked about this, I forget what NBA player pod he was on, but he, like, they went to the conference finals, and then the next year they were like, okay, I think I'm ready to, like, give this a long term commitment, and they were like, I think we're gonna trend the other way because we may be headed toward a rebuild. Like, we think we've hit the ceiling on this. And he was like, all right, well, then I'd like to go. And look, the trade, I'm just done fighting people on it. If you think three players that have never made an all-star team and
Trade to bring him here?
Yeah, and one pick and one pick swap is too much for Carmelo Anthony, fine. I'm not going to fight you on that. It is assets. They could have got another guy. There was a looming lockout, and they would have traded in the next day to Brooklyn or New Jersey at the time, because the next day Darren Williams got traded to New Jersey and Denver had no reason to keep him. Fine. Like, we just disagree on it. I think they could have built a successful team after that, which is more my frustration. They were the 2 seed 2 years later and then traded a first round pick unprotected for Andrea Bargnani. That's the trade that bothers me.
And it's not only that. And it's the thing I always go back to, which is you guaranteed Billups salary and then used your wave, your amnesty, your one amnesty on Billups instead of where that freaking rule was written to be used, which was on Amari Stoudemire. And if you had done that, creates all kinds of different cap, flexibility for them moving forward.
Not every billionaire has the stamina, the dedication, or the fire to become the most unpopular owner in sports. But not everyone is James Dolan, the owner of the New York Knicks. This is Reign of Error, a new podcast series that gives you a courtside seat for the controversies, scandals, and drama that seems to follow the infamous billionaire. Track Dolan's rise from aspiring musician to the throne of one of the most beloved franchises in sports. Along the way, he'll battle his own players, fans, celebrities, the New York media, politicians, even the Girl Scouts. Reign of Error unpacks the outlandish story over 5 riveting episodes, detailing how Dolan became a lightning rod of criticism in his quest to outdo his billionaire father, while also asking the $6 billion question, why doesn't he just sell the team? Check out Reign of Error wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen early and ad-free on the Amazon Music or Wondery app. What's up, Knicks fans? Super excited to announce our new sponsor, Oakley. Express your style and build a look that's made just for you. Oakley's changing the game, and it's time to discover a whole new world of possibilities. Do you run, golf, train, or just want to look like your favorite athlete? Then you need to get yourself a pair of Oakleys today. Suited for everyday eyewear with frames and lenses allowing for an extension of self and an expression of your personality, with Oakley, there's more than meets the eye. Here at Knicks Film School, our motto is look good, play good, and that's why Oakley is the perfect partner for us. Not a one of us leaves the house in the morning without our Oakleys. And listen up, because it's officially almost summer, which means you need to upgrade your sunglass game now. Check out Oakley.com to get yourself a pair today. Also, did you know that Oakley even offers prism lens technology? Now, I know what you're thinking. GMAC, what the hell is that? Well, it's a technology solely used by Oakley and available for everyday settings as well. Want to know more? Head on over to Oakley.com and check it out for yourself. And while you're there, get yourself a pair of everyday glasses that'll be sure to change your look for the better. When you wear Oakley, there really is more than meets the eye. Don't trust me? Try it for yourself. I've worn a lot of sunglass brands in my life, and I can assure you that Oakley is not only the best looking, but the best quality out there. Head on over to Oakley.com for more information today.
Look, Carmelo Anthony gets painted in this light because he never got onto the team that could put it all together, other than the Denver team, which, again, that Denver team lost to Kobe Bryant. Speaking of Kobe Bryant went through a fallow period in his career where he was putting up a shit ton of points for a team that won. What did that Laker team win? Like 35 games or something? So like no, you know, like Paul Pierce is another guy pretty high on the all-time scoring list. What would his reputation have been had he not teamed up with Kevin Garnett? To say nothing of what would Garnett's reputation have been had he not teamed up with Paul Pierce. You know, Ray Allen, a guy who gets lauded because he ended up going on to be part of those Celtics teams for many, many, many years. His pinnacle achievement was like a tough, you know, best player on a tough second round out when he was in Seattle. You know, it's like, you go through, you know, I mentioned Dominique Wilkins, like there's Vince Carter, you know, is another guy who's like, he was 20th on the all-time scoring list. Like he never did it. Like there's lots of guys who just were never in the right situation.
John.
Russell Westbrook after he left. Okay. Yeah. You know, it's another guy, you know, and like, and then you have guys who had their one shining moment. They're like Allen Iverson. Allen Iverson got that finals and he has the MVP too. But like you look at his larger career, guy who actually played with Carmelo Anthony for a bit in Denver, you look at his overall career and how many teams was he the best player on that like didn't do, you know, diddly squat. You know, there's a lot of guys out there like this and he unfortunately gets tagged with the reputation more so than a lot of them because again, he spent the prime of his career for playing for an organization that didn't know what to ask from its elbow at the time.
Like, look at Moses Malone.
Oh yeah, that's a good example.
Two MVPs on like 6 and 7 seeds in the late '70s, and then he gets to late '70s, early '80s, and then he gets traded to a team that made the finals. They go 67-15, and then 15-1 in the playoffs. Like, this is where legacies get made when you have a competent organization around you. And yeah, I do recognize some of the blame he needs to share. Like play style is a thing, and there's a lot of isolation that was done in his time. So yeah, as sure. A result, it can mostly fall on him. I think there was a team that could have made it work. There were a 2 seed in 2013. You build on that team and don't trade any remaining assets for Andrea Bargnani. I wonder what that team looks like for 2014, 2015, 2016, and so on. But at the end of the day, I'm appreciative of what it was. And the context of his career will, for me, and look, this is also, like, we've talked about this privately, but the Dolan of it all, I'm not saying it's like James Dolan's fault that Carmelo Anthony's tenure wasn't successful, but the trickle-down effect of like the reason Donnie Walsh was able to build something from 2008 on and trade all of these roster pieces to get under the cap was he sold Dolan on a bill of goods that in 2010 were getting LeBron James and all these big free agents, right?
Yep.
And then it didn't happen. So while that roster that many a Knicks fan holds dear of the Wilson Chandlers and the Gallinaris and the Raymond Feltons like existed, that was a consolation prize because he still made a promise. He was trying to make good on it with the owner. And so if Melo gets traded to New Jersey and then he's like, well, we're going to get Chris Paul. It's like, why do I trust you? You're going to get Chris Paul. In 6 months, you didn't get LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and Carmelo Anthony. And so that's partly why there's a context to the trade that gets
There's always context.
He was a pleasure to watch, though. I enjoyed watching Carmelo Anthony in one of those moments when he just wasn't going to miss the game winners that are circulating through Twitter.
Well,
today. I enjoyed them.
You know? Let me just say one. Okay. Let me add this. I think that part of it is also important for a lot of people in that there are a lot of people who did not enjoy the way Carmelo Anthony played ball. And this is the other part that I should have mentioned at the top and I've forgotten. I meant to. I don't want to say he came along at the wrong era, but if Carmelo Anthony comes along 10 years earlier, I think it's very, very likely that his career looks a lot different and that how he's thought of in NBA history looks a lot different because just around the time that he was kind of coming right into his prime, 2010, 2011, 2012, that's exactly when 2013, that's exactly when the NBA was changing. And it was just like it became a spread pick and roll league. That's like what the league became. And the isolation, you know, abilities that he displayed were not really part of that. Now, I think as the years have gone by, we are reminded more and more and more that you you need guys who can isolate and effectively, you know, get buckets, because otherwise the whole thing falls on its face. And then that leads to, I think, what is a slightly more valid criticism, which is his career in New York. You know, Carmelo Anthony averaged 3.2 assists per game, I think. 3.2. It's like, and that's honestly, that's why Carmelo Anthony is in the conversation for like the top 50 players of all time, maybe top 40, and not, you know, top 25, 30 or something.
I hear you. Who is he passing to? Like, there's a moment at the end of one of the games in 2015 when he actually made the right pass and found a wide open Jose Calderon in the corner for three, and he missed it. And
Jose Calderon, exactly.
But that's my point. Like, okay, so you're mad that he didn't pass more to Iman Shumpert and Landry Fields.
But that's the great what if. That's the great what if. What if there were better players? I think we assume that he would have been a much more willing passer. And if you look at his seasons, it's not like he didn't have seasons in there where he passed the ball more. I know it's just one season. He did have a season here where he averaged 4.2 assists per game.
Mm-hmm. Well, go to the beginning of his, I'm looking at rebounds, but like the beginning of his career, like he was always a guy that back then it was like, I'm here to score, you know, like this this was his role. He was a scorer. And that's why I think I appreciated him about as what he was able to do. Cause I looked at him as get buckets. And that's why the thing was always, can you get him a point guard? And the best point guards he played with were 3 weeks of Jeremy Lin and one season of Raymond Felton.
And again, a lot of great players, great all time NBA champion, MVP level players have been more I was going to say the hammer and not the nail. No, but like the finisher as opposed to the initiator, you know? Mm-hmm. And Melo had the point guard. The 1 year he truly had the point guard, he went to the Western Conference Finals with Denver and Chauncey Billups.
Bingo.
So
three super chats.
All right, let's do it. Perfect time of getting before I get out of here. Jesse M. Thanks, Jesse. The argument against retiring his jersey is laughable. I think he's one. I have him personally ranked as the fifth greatest Knick ever. The four guys ahead of him all have their jerseys retired: Patrick Ewing, Willis Reed, Walt Clyde Frazier, and Dave the Busher. And, you know, there's a bunch of other guys on those title teams that have their jerseys retired as well. Like, I have all the respect in the world for Dick Barnett and Bill Bradley. Like, Carmelo Anthony should have his number on the rafters. Browning Knicks. What's going on, Browning Knicks? He held the broken crown until Phil broke him down. Well said. My favorite memory has to be 42-17-6 in Boston. I'll never forget watching that game. Just ask Jared Jeffries what happened. Again, gave up the ball in a key spot, right? And how did that work out for him? Love the work. Stay mellow. Our future first ballot Hall of Famer. Without question.
It's why the LeBron MJ debate, which I get, like, I'm not trying to go down that road. I get it's contentious, but when people go like LeBron, Kobe and MJ aren't passing up the shot with the game on the line, and LeBron doesn't have that dog in him. Well, LeBron passed to Joel, who was the guy that missed the free throws at the end of the 2018 finals, George Hill. LeBron passed to George Hill. George Hill had to make two free throws. Then his teammate forgot to score on an offensive rebound. Like, what are we doing?
I was like, wait, LeBron was on the Lakers? George Hill never played for Lakers.
When he was 2018 with the Cavs, yes, I remember. Yeah, LeBron had the ball at the top of the key and then saw wide open George Hill. I was like, oh, there's a layup right there. We should probably go there. Last one.
Sean, show with a W, our man. Melo's legacy is as complicated as one can be for any New York athlete. Completely agree. That's so well said. What a great topic to discuss on Casual Friday. Hint, hint, wink, wink, GMAC. You gotta discuss this.
Especially with Sean, who has this, he's a Syracuse grad. So Sean being more one of the harsher Melo critics with the legacy of Melo, like you have the most successful moment of his basketball life under your fandom as a Cuse fan. I will just remind you, Sean, and this is the last thing we could say before we get out of here. This is where I'm always going to have to bring in baseball into everything, right? There is a difference between the Yankee Knicks fan and the Met Knicks fan, where Yankee Knicks fans bring the Yankee expectations. So we measure the Knicks' success and have the arrogance of what the Yankees have brought, which is one of the greatest franchises ever. And as a Met Knicks fan, I recognize, oh, the Knicks are the Mets. Like, they really haven't won that much. Their franchise has like a stretch where they did win two championships, but largely they've been good, but not the best. They've had great players who weren't the best in the sport. And like, I have a different appreciation for Carmelo Anthony, the same I have appreciation for David Wright, who never really won anything, or Mike Piazza, who never really won anything. But I appreciate watching their greatness in my team's uniform. And I think there is a Yankee thing. There's a thing out there for Yankee fans where they do not recognize, because they're not used to watching teams that don't really win much, you know? So as a result, they are stuck. And look, incompetent ownership, Dolan to Wilpon, is like kind of a one-to-one thing too.
That's a good call. Yeah,
there are ties here, you know? So
listen, Carmelo Anthony, over the course of his career, made 10 all-star teams, 10 NBA all-star teams. There are only 32 players in history that made more. Again, by any conceivable metric, this is one of the greatest players to ever walk the earth. And he should be remembered and appreciated as such by anyone who calls themselves a Knicks fan. So on that note, thanks everybody for checking this out. This semi-emergency live stream. I don't know. Emergency-ish live stream. We'll have more good stuff on the way this week, including Casual Friday, where I know there'll be lots more Mellow talk, as there should be. But until then, take care, and I'll talk to you soon.